Then hello, hello everyone, and welcome to our new episode of BSF Elementary. I'm Clara from BSF Communications, and I'm happy to be here with you today. And with me is my co-host Lucas.
Hi, Clara.
And we have two very special guests with us today. One is Matthias Nachtmann, Sustainable Business Model Developer at BSF.
Hi. Hello.
And then there's Björn Kiepe, who is Head of Agronomy of Digital Farming at BSF.
Hi, Clara. Hi, Lucas. Thanks for your invite.
Yeah, I'm pretty looking forward to what we're talking to about today. So what is our topic today, Lucas?
Yeah, thank you very much, Clara. As you just mentioned, we have Björn and Matthias with us today. They are two experts from our agricultural division at BSF. And today's topic is also related to agriculture, of course, actually to the future of agriculture, or maybe even the present. Let's see what they will be saying. So today we will be speaking about digital farming. And let me maybe first ask you, Björn and Matthias, because yeah, Clara and myself are real urban kids.
Absolutely.
We do not really have personal overlaps with the topic of agriculture. So maybe asking you, what is the relevance both of farmers as well of agriculture today? And what is its importance in society nowadays? What would you say?
I believe that agriculture, and specifically digital agriculture, really has the opportunity to change how we operate in agriculture. We have seen over the last decade that farmers use more and more technology using GPS. So they have self-driving tractors today on the field. But I think there's even more to it. We are working on solutions. We use algorithm to predict yield. We help them to better define the right moment to applicate a field to use a crop protection product much smarter than in the past. And we're using here digital as really an enabler to find a new way for farming.
Thanks.
Yeah, maybe Matthias, because I just read an interesting article of the World Economic Forum, actually, that states that more than the half of the world population lives in urban areas already today. So as I just said, Clara and myself are real urban kids, so to say. Also, the question to you, the importance of agriculture nowadays, is it that important?
I think that all the global problems we currently discuss, climate change, biodiversity, protection and so on, but also food availability and food prices, that goes resource efficiency, that goes back to farming. And let's say I was exactly raised on the border of a village or close to a city.
Okay.
And now if you look on a field, or if you look to Germany, 50% of Germany, just to take it as an example, is farmland. So one third not. And all our food is produced on 50%, which is roughly 15 million hectares. And now if you consider, if we need to protect more biodiversity, we need acreage for it. If you want to buy new houses, we need acreage for it. If you want to produce renewable energy, we need acreage. So there is a big momentum in farming to innovate, but also to solve really big problems. And here I think, and we think, digital farming pays in.
Yeah, thanks. And it is going to be a big picture also. So the world population is growing, so it will take on some momentum regarding the relevance of agriculture, as I guess. So coming back to the question of digital farming, when I think of farming as someone who doesn't have any overlaps with it, it's not like there's wooden carts on the fields today, right? So what does digital farming look like? What can I understand under modern agriculture?
Yeah, let me maybe start with some examples. First of all, globally, digital agriculture looks totally different. We have cropping systems in North America, huge farms, high-tech machinery. You have in Latin America even larger farms, and they produce soy and corn for the world. In the same moment, we have also in Asia, we have smallholder farmers who maybe manage one or two fields with a family, and still a lot of consumption is then on their own or for their own. So agriculture is very diverse, and so are the digital tools. For the smallholder, for example, tools which are on your smartphones, simple to use apps, even not with written information, but pictures for the rural people in developing countries are helping there to, for example, better understand what's my problem in the field. Do I have a pest here? What kind of disease is in my field? And these kind of digital tools then can enable them to make the right product choice to have better yields. And in the Americas, the solution looked totally different. There we have the algorithm and solutions which are directly connected to the machinery. So, for example, farmers can directly in the cap get advice which product to apply and where to apply it in the field. And then the sprayer is automatically executing it, and you can basically cheat your field on a square meter.
Thanks, Björn. So it's actually, there's a diversity of applications already today. But could you tell our listeners that are not as advanced in agriculture, what are the main use fields for digital agriculture, so for the digital technologies that are in use?
I think it depends also on your definition of let's say, agriculture or digital agriculture. First of all, there is... A lot of that is related to precision ag technology. So having the right equipment to better execute, to vary the seeding density on a given field or in a specific field zone, to use more or less fertilizer on parts of a field. What we use, when we speak about digital farming, we often speak about optimizing the crop production. And this then takes into account the various measures a farmer does throughout the year, all the job steps from the seeding up to the harvest. And here, all the solutions that help the farmers to optimize, to get a better outcome, to reach a better yield, a better quality with lower input, or keep the same yield level. These are then the optimization principles we apply, and several solutions are out there in the market.
So, for example, if you, as let's say, raised in a city, if you walk a dog close to the city in a field and you see a square meter or a field, 20 years ago, a farmer treated all square meters in that field the same. Same seeding rate, same fertilizer level, same crop protection. And it was actually, when you asked him what have you harvested, he gave you 7.6 ton per hectare. This was all one. And the technology Björn talked about, or if you take that smartphone and the camera, is a very nice example. This is really a square meter, a crop specific piece of data. And the square meter Björn talked about, we work on that every square meter, every crop in future get the optimal treatment. Like if you go to your medicine, to your medical doctor, and he said, me as a person, I have an issue, can you help me? So the digital farming, let's say, North Star vision is to really optimize each individual crop, each individual square meter, so that we can, for example, balance ecological impacts. We really can just fertilize as much as required on that square meter. And that's the big North Star we are all heading for.
Oh, it's absolutely interesting. So it's a difference in general use of also pesticides or insecticides as well, and having a better understanding of what your field needs, right? So what are the chances for sustainability with these technologies?
First of all, we need to go one level deeper. Sustainability means targets in improving biodiversity, so more beneficial insects or protected herbs species. It also includes water protection, air protection, CO2 sequestrations. These are all dimensions when we discuss with downstream players or food companies or farmers sustainability. And digital farming, as soon we have data points, if soon we have a source of data, then we can integrate this sustainability discussion in a new production system. Production system means not only looking at one season, one crop, but actually look how is the crop rotation of how many years and how we can integrate biodiversity protection, for example, or carbon sequestration.
Mm-hmm. When I am thinking about digital farming, I'm actually thinking about automated driving tractors, for example, or even drones flying over fields. So this is, as I understood now from you, actually not future anymore. It's already present. It's reality, right?
That's reality. Yeah, you have so many different type of sensors today, which are used in digital agriculture. You have the tractor as such, which is also a sensor because it drives through the field and is collecting data. Even every second, it gives you information on the fuel consumption and so on. But then you have the drones which fly over the field. You can really get high resolution images. And based on these images from a drone, you can start counting insects. You can start to get an understanding how many weeds do you have in the field, but not only how many, but also what type of species. So you have algorithm which then can use this image and you analyze it and you get the information. For example, in Brazil, on a large field, you have on 60%, you have weeds. There you need a treatment and the key weeds are the following, like Dicitaria and other species. Okay. So this is what you can get with a drone already. And then there's the next level. There's also remote sensing information. So many, many, many use cases are related to satellite images where from the orbit information are collected. And depending on the satellite with a resolution up to 3 to 5 meters, you get then the information for your field. And you can also use this information and link it to agronomy.
It's really just very, very specific data that you get then. And you were talking about the app earlier. Would you like to describe to our listeners what they see on the app? So how would you imagine what this application looks like?
Yeah, there are different apps. The initial app I refer to is a what we call a scouting app. So years back, farmers always scouted their field because they need to understand what's ongoing. And today we help them to simplify here because you do not need any paper and pen any longer, but you take your smartphone. And just by taking an image and uploading the image in seconds, you immediately get a diagnosis. And with the image, of course, you also have a geolocation. So no documentation is needed because on your smartphone, you have the information also the next year available to then understand what type of problem you had in a specific area of a field. And we have in one application we have several use cases. So you can understand the nutrient level of a specific crop by taking an image. You can understand the pests which are in the field. You can also count insects in traps which are in the field. And this is really simplifying field scouting activities for the farmer. And it's very simple to do.
And that's also simplifying the handling of the data, right? Because I could imagine that a lot of different data like satellite data, weather models, etc. are collected. And it's not that easy for farmers to really handle that if they are not that experienced in like IT things.
Exactly. So it comes in a very intuitive way. It's for the farmer, he takes the image, he can look it up. It's all the information is easy accessible for him. In many app development activities, also the farmers are directly involved and they even help us to articulate how the app should look like, what are their routines on a field, how they would like to use it. And this is then, today, farmers can even then also upload this information to other applications and link it to field information. So I think here digitalization offers plenty of opportunities to also merge more and more different data sets.
Sounds super interesting. Matthias, I still wanted to ask you because you're the sustainable business model specialist for us at BASF. These are totally different business models than we had like 10 or maybe even 5 or 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, I would say there are different questions our customers have today. So if I pick up the nitrification or fertilization maps just mentioned. So BASF is I think to understand it, BASF really serves a lot of market in the food and ag chain. And to give one example of a new customer challenge, the colleagues who serve the beer market came and said, look, our customers have a question, how you can reduce the carbon footprint of a bottle of beer. And then we sit together, we take, for example, the nitrification fertilization map as one tool. We have nitrification inhibitors, which basically help to reduce the nitrogen emissions to the air and increase the rate of nitrogen taken up by the crop. And that overall has a benefit for carbon footprint. And then we design a production system together with that customer and towards this issue. And then we first pilot. And yes, if we see there's value created, then we can discuss value delivery and value capture, which are then the three cornerstones of the business model development.
And that means that actually digital farming also pays in a more sustainable way of drinking my beer, for example.
Yeah, at the end, yeah, that's the beauty of IT and the beauty of BASF, because you need to put the digital component in, because that helps you to scale a good practice faster to more acreage. Yeah, if you earlier, you 20 years ago, you send an advisor to a field and said, I would use that rate of nitrogen, 120 kilogram per hectare. But today we can send a map, or the farmers can develop, download the map automatically from our software. So the scalability is very important. And at the same time, the science of the molecule, like, for example, this nitrification inhibitor, and having all that in-house and develop a new solution for that. I think that's the beauty and the power of BASF.
Thanks so much for the insight. So you also talk to farmers on a daily basis or often?
I'd love to.
So who are the customers you talk to normally?
Yeah, usually it's we're living in a transforming world. And I think if you go to gas station, if you pay your gas at home, or if you're a commodity trader, then you really see it. If you try to buy flour or sunflower oil in the supermarket, you recognize things are different than the last 20, 30, 40 years. And for us, it's very important how these changes translate to markets. And we could ask our supplier, but for us, the learning is much higher if you talk to our customers and the customers of our customers. So we supply in the cereal crop system, wheat, barley farmers who maybe have an interim crop like canola or potato. And we ask their customers, like the malters and the brewers, like the mill companies or the bakeries, what actually problems they have in their changing world. And then we try to reflect how we can help them with our portfolio.
Thanks so much. Now that we've gone to this direction of BASF, so what is the research doing at BASF at the moment? What's the stance? And I think that's a question for Björn, right?
Yeah, it's a great question, first of all. In terms of research in digital farming, first of all, I think it's very important to help here the audience to understand that when we speak research, normally in BASF, we speak about developing molecules or developing new seed varieties. That it's normally, we speak about a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we speak about innovation in the area of digital, we have to understand that here the speed of innovation is totally different. When we speak here in our organization about a long-term project, this project is then 3 years ahead of us. So means we start something and in 3 years we will see it live in the field. And even after 2 years, we will have a first beta test even. So we test it with first growers and let them operate with the digital product and ask for feedback and use this then for the launch. We are organized here in terms of innovation in three competency centers. So we have one competence center called agronomy, which I'm leading. And we have also here a tech team and a data science team. And these teams, all of them, they form the R&D community within digital farming. And the activities we are doing is very hard to explain here in a few seconds. We look into new ways to identify insects, for example. And not only insect identification, but then also identify the beneficials, which then, for example, would also allow, once there is a bee in a field, that we are able to maybe switch off a spray application in the future. Or we look into new ways of weed management. We're using drones already actively in Latin America, but we bring this innovation also now to Japan and other markets. We also use drones more and more for application purpose. So people do not longer need to walk through the field, but they can use a drone for the application. So in terms of bystander safety, it's a huge difference. And in terms of pest and disease modeling activities, we apply machine learning. We have data-driven algorithm development. We integrate feedback loops from farmers, but also from our trial activities. Basically, from all the data we have here in our BSF organization, we bring this data together and create a new level of models with also an unknown performance in terms of model performance or model quality. So it's really broad.
Is that making us as BSF unique in comparison to, for example, our competition?
I think what makes us unique is that that our approach is to look at the entire cropping system, and more, it's not only about one indication or one specific application. It's you look into the entire season, and more you look into the crop rotation, because at the end of a day, a farmer is managing a field, but within his field he is managing, depending on the region, 3, 4, 5, 6 different crops over the years. And I think here is, at least from our understanding, when we speak to customers, that they are really interested not only in a very little solution to solve only one problem. They really also are interested in support to having here the bigger picture, the crop rotation picture, and then have here an optimization, still with an interest to have a secure yield, to also achieve a return on investment. But then also in many, many markets, also now the farmers reach out and want also help to increase sustainability on their farm. And here, I think technology and digitalization can really bring all the different elements quite nicely together for the grower.
Yeah, and maybe to bridge this downstream. So for example, to the cereal value chain, the dairy or the pig farming value chain, I think What we understand talking to these players downstream is they say, look, you have digital tools like Xavio or Cloud Farms, you have sustainability assessment tools like AgBalance or Optinix, and you basically are able to cover much, much more than one individual production step in the chain. The challenge, of course, is not only then to supply the physical products, how we call them, so a fungicide or a vitamin or a feed ingredient, but actually really design a new solution and a business model out of it. And that's, I think, to complete what Björn said about research, when I joined BSF, research was understood as in-house. But today, programs like AgroStart, we open ourselves up to really work together with startups, looking inside but also outside for technology components which create a new solution.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing this globally as well, right?
So yeah, AgroStart is a global program. Mm-hmm. So it was launched some years ago in Brazil, but now our colleagues bring it to US and Europe and other areas.
That's great to know. So it's an area where a lot is happening and which takes up pace, I think, in the future as well. So Björn, how long have you been in this position of yours?
I've been here in digital farming. In my actual role, I'm in this role, I think, now for 4 or 5 years. Even earlier, I think back in 2012, 2013, I started to have first touch points with digitalization and digital farming. It was still in my former company and my former role. So it's one decade already. But even even earlier in other jobs, there were already touch points. I was in product development and also, let's say, 15 years ago, it was more and more understood how you can use data not only to optimize a product, but then also to use it to have, in the beginning, we had decision support tools. And it's really for me, the great motivation is that over time, we have really moved in the industry from this decision support tools now to decision making tools, that we have much more evidence to really give a recommendation to a grower each and every day for his given field. And the precision of the recommendation we can give today has significantly changed compared to the time when I started.
Yes. And what's also interesting is that agriculture is actually nothing new to you, right? Because you also have a personal connection to farming.
Yeah, you're right. I'm a farmer. It's so simple. I grew up on a family farm in the middle of Germany. And still at the weekend, I'm on this farm. I do still the crop protection on my own when possible over the weekends. The good thing is with the tools we have, I can really sit in my Cologne office and do then the planning and see whether the weekend is suitable for an application or not.
So you're actually really testing our technologies on your own farm.
Yeah, definitely. To me, this is really, really important. Actually, on my farm, we have tested, for example, a variable rate application technology. So not applying the same rate on the entire field, but apply on certain parts of a field more crop protection, but on the low yield potential zones, you use less fungicides. And I used it. And the neighbors, I still remember, I was out in the field on a Saturday, and the neighbors looked why I was using this new equipment, and they realized that I not spared out, but applied on a few parts of a field less, and they said, "Hey, something is wrong with your sprayer." And I said, no, that's on purpose. And it actually worked out. I had a great harvest, no compromise on yield, reduced cost. And I think it's, to me, a real benefit if I reach out also when I meet with other customers, that I can really also share my experience. And I also learn really firsthand what is not yet working. So digital agriculture is yet not perfect. There are many types of different tractors, different machinery, connectivity here and there is still an issue. But when you're out in the field and you really see the pain points, I come back Monday morning in the office and want to solve it.
That's great. And what is being planted?
On my farm, on the family farm, we produce wheat, barley, oilseed rape, and silage corn, which is then used for biogas production plant. Oh, okay. So also producing energy.
Crops. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and Matthias, you actually brought your own book to us today. We want also to take a few minutes to talk about that. You were writing, or at least co-writing, as I understood, a book on digital farming, actually, right?
Yeah, so I have the honor to be together with Professor Dörr from TU Kaiserslautern to publish a book. So 2-3 years ago, we were sitting actually almost around a table and discussing, look, 10 years of digital farming, massive investments in that technologies, how much adoption we see in the market and why not more. And so we ask ourselves, isn't it time to reflect where are we today? So what is the status of the technologies? What is the status of the different agricultural questions that can be solved or cannot be solved? And how we can use that to that learnings to maybe looking forward for the next 10 years, really support much stronger, not on 10 or 20, but on 50, on 80% on the acreages worldwide, the transformation towards a more sustainable agriculture. And that moment was born in that ecosystem around Southwest Germany and these different players. And so we actually asked five colleagues that, would you be interested to contribute to that book? And the feedback was so phenomenal, so that we just said, okay, then give it a try. And actually, we started 2019 at the Agrotechnica, which is a global leading ag tech fair in Hannover, Germany, to basically acquire first authors.
Mm-hmm. All right. If I was your acquaintance and we meet on a party, how would you describe your book in 3 sentences? That's challenging, I know, but
I would take that loaf of bread, yeah, we have here on the table. If you as a consumer are interested how this was produced, we can even provide you data and all that whole chain and all the technologies, they are summarized in that book. And as well about apples, about tomatoes, wow, about wine and beer as well.
Is there any possibility, Matthias, for me as a consumer when I'm standing, for example, in a bakery, to know which product to which extent, for example, is produced with a kind of digital farming at least? Or is it that common that I can easily trust on that?
Yeah, I would. Also today, actually, it's not easy. Yeah, it. If you go to a butcher, historically, you're used to ask where you got that meat from. But if you go to the baker, have you ever asked where you got your cereals from?
No.
And you would help a lot. And all the listeners to the podcast would help farmers a lot if they ask their bakery once a week, where you got your cereals from? Because that gives an attention. Hey, it's important where we got our inputs from. And the second step will be then that, but that is still to go, a time to go, that there's transparency for an end consumer. I think it's a kind of a nice to have, but if you come all this carbon climate change transformation, if you one day will ask your baker man or the producer of your beer or of your potato, what's the carbon footprint of that product? Then you actually really need to have a closed data chain from the field to the end consumer that you can prove and provide the data. Yes, this has a more advantage or less CO2 emission related to this product compared to another one.
And this is something that we do already today with the data that we have, right? Or is it not yet possible?
Yeah, so for example, you see this alcohol-free beer. Yeah. So actually, currently we get supplied 300 boxes of carbon-optimized beer. And this is where we try together with with a big brewery to develop a production system that we can actually show that it has a, we could show 1/3 reduction of carbon footprint on the field for that barley. And this is what we do today. But now we are in the process, of course, how to translate that value creation towards a production system and a business model. I think for us, this was at the end a kind of a corona project. Mm-hmm. And when you sit down in lockdown and you are a group of 45 authors, and we had some milestones, and you see then the articles popping in, and I think that was really kind of you could not think on, oh my gosh, in what situation we are in, but you can see really that we form a kind of a virtual team with all that authors from Germany, France, UK, Netherlands, US, yeah? And it was really kind, for me, it was more like a corona project. Mm-hmm. And for, I think also for Professor Dörr. And that was actually a lot of fun. And what was interesting also to see that consistently through all the articles, there's the researchers, the startups or the farmers all are really sure digital helps to scale sustainability. And of course, with these kind of North Stars, this is very, very motivating. But it was a lot of work as well. So that's why I owe a lot of thanks to my family, who yes, missed me on Sunday and Saturday mornings a lot, I think.
What's the name of the book again?
Handbook Digital Farming, Digital Transformation for Sustainable Agriculture.
So nice. We can put it into the show notes as well. A short outlook on future. Quo vadis? So where are we going with digital farming in the next time? What's your outlook?
Maybe within the next 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, the shorter time, right? So Björn, what's your outlook on that?
Wow, great questions. Our research projects have a look 3 years into the future. What's out there in 5 years is it's very hard to say. I personally believe with the younger generation becoming more active in farming, the digital natives, they use digital tools in a totally different way. I think we see more adaptation on also the smaller farms. I think we will, depending on the regions, we will also see that government maybe is also asking to use digital tools more intensively, because I think the benefit have been proven. So we have markets in France, for example, where actually farmers already today get certificates when they use digital tools, because they can really document that it's less crop production use, but still same output. So I think we will see here more and more adaptation in the market. I think we will also see a consolidation in the market, because right now we have a lot of startups. We have big industry players like our organization and our competitors. But then the startups, we have, it's really a crowded place. And I think that we also still have quite some duplication of services, where I think that over time here some consolidation will happen. I also believe that we will have more, let's say, cropping system experts. And I think this is also something we have decided here also in our organization. I think it's an illusion that one company can be perfect in digital farming in all the crops around the world. So I believe that we will have in the regions and also in the different cropping systems, let's say, champions. And these champions will also form networks of partnering. I strongly believe that with digitalization, we also see new ways of partnering principles in the entire industry.
Mm. What about you, Matthias?
Yeah, can be all underlined. Yeah, and maybe to describe the how and how we thrive together with the industry. So BASF is one of the founding members of the Friends of Digital Farming. And there's machinery players, farmers, tech providers, downstream players, so dairy and food retail. And we discuss about how's the future. And what we see as a common challenge right now is that we need to increase production as well as sustainability of production. And usually that was a dilemma. Usually you can say, I would like to produce as biodiversity saving as possible, or you were saying, I want to harvest as much as possible. In the situation where we are in right now, we somehow need to break that dilemma and find alternative solutions by the technologies Björn mentioned. If I know the opportunity of each individual hectare or if each individual square meter, why not I leave the square meters with the lowest yield out and give a place for birds or for biodiversity? And I think these are the things we're currently have in mind, how we can sustainably increase the production and intensify so that we, A, get the commodity prices down again, because there's enough cereals, commodities on the market available, and we don't compromise on sustainability.
That's a nice last words, actually. So there's chance for networking in the future, and there's chance for sustainability, even more sustainability than today. And thanks for being with us here today, Björn and Matthias, and giving us your insights. It was really interesting for us. And thanks to you, listeners, on the other side. Thanks for joining us today. And we would like to get your subscribe or your likes on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you have questions or comments, don't hesitate to write us an email on elementary@basf.com.
And for any case, if you're further interested in any more information, we will, of course, also put the relevant links to our agricultural division of BASF into the description, and also, of course, the reference to the book that Matthias just mentioned.
Bye.